You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Last week, we all mourned the passing of Milt Rosenberg, and one of the things I realized is that we have not done on this show our due diligence of making sure we talk to authors, people who are talking about the things that are important, poets and historians, and the news of last week made me think, you know, we need to learn more about the world around us, take the time to talk to the artists. And joining me on the line is Katia Ulisse. She is a fiction writer. She was born in Haiti. Her short stories, essays, and pushcart prize-nominated poetry appear in numerous literary journals, anthologies, including The Caribbean Writer, Smartish Pace, Phoebe Meridian's. There's a whole slew of incredible pieces she's written. Katia, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Where are we talking to you from? I know that we're probably keeping you up late wherever you are in the world.
I am speaking to you from Baltimore, Maryland. Baltimore.
I love Baltimore. They have an incredible children's museum there that we had a fortunate stopover in Baltimore. What brought you to Baltimore? What's part of your journey from Haiti to Baltimore?
Well, my journey from Haiti began in Brooklyn, New York, and from there we went to New Jersey, and from there to Washington, D.C., and from there to other parts of Maryland, and so on. So what brought me to Baltimore really is my husband. It's a long story.
So many of us have that
story, but
love happens to us if we're lucky, and then it takes us somewhere else sometimes, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And so tell me, were you always a writer? Were you always creating stories, whether in your mind or writing them down in books and journals?
I think quite possibly, yes. And I think it began as a way to just escape certain realities. And so, but when I did begin to put pen to paper and create stories was when I was in the airplane coming to America, coming to the United States for the first time. And I remember seeing people at the an area where they could observe travelers. And I remember seeing them waving to the person boarding the airplane and knowing that from that distance, there was no way they could see us and make out our faces. And I pinned a letter to the people waving at us. And that is my first writing that I remember.
How old were you?
I was 12.
You were 12. That's wonderful. I mean, the idea that you would want to be able to communicate with people who didn't know that they were connecting and sort of validate the fact that they were is beautiful.
Oh, well, Yes. Thank you for saying that. And it's been a long time, and it's been a long time.
What compelled your family and gave them the ability to leave Haiti when you were 12?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question?
Of course. What gave your family the desire and the ability to leave Haiti when you were 12?
Thank you for asking that. Somebody just asked me the same question recently, and my mother was sitting with us in the living room. My mother said, "Your father wanted to make more money," she put it plainly. And so it was for the opportunity to have a better job and to have a brighter future, and that my father wanted for us and my mother also. So we came to the United States essentially to look for better opportunities and also to escape. Well, let me be very careful with that word, just to get away from certain conditions in the environment that were not particularly pleasing to my family at the time.
Well, and that's, you know, I've been trying to, my background is in history. And one of the things that I've been trying to, you know, we can all get angry about language that's used, but we should all, I think, have an understanding that Haiti's situation didn't spontaneously happen, whether it's the words that are used to describe it, nor in the last 20 years or 50 years. I mean, it's a story of a population that has gone through a lot of turmoil over the last 400, 500, 600 years, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It has gone through a lot of turmoil. But the one thing that we Haitians and Friends of Haiti are particularly proud of is that in spite of the turmoil, in spite of the violence, that as a people of our fathers and mothers were able to bind themselves or come together in such a way that they defeated one of the most formidable armies or at a time when they were thought to be an army that could not be defeated. And that's one thing that we're very proud of. And even post those years and our independence in 1804, we as a people continue to teach this to our children and hope and work towards having men such as, and women, having people such as our forefathers, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, Toussaint Louverture, to walk the earth today and create the sort of work, the sort of pride that we had in our history or have in our history.
And I don't think people realize that that rebellion, that war in 1804 against the French, was for freedom. It was one of the most brutal slave societies in the world.
Yes, it was. And that is something that is known throughout the world for the French and the way the brutality that was levied against the slaves in Saint-Domingue at the time. And yes, it was a brutal rebellion, but I don't know any war or battles or rebellions that were, you know, done in a very genteel way. And so the people of Haiti at the time did meet what they had sought out to accomplish, which was to free Haiti, and Haiti was declared independent in Gonaïves in 1804, and did defeat Napoleon's army. And we also have to note that it is the first and only successful rebellion in the history of the world, and Haiti became a free nation. And only after, I believe, the United States of America. So we were the first black free nation.
Yeah, and that's the thing I've been trying to understand and learn more about in the last week is, you know, after the fight for freedom in 1804, then trying to establish commerce, because France really profited so much off of the coffee and sugar that they were able to reap from the labors of others. And then to be able to try to develop their own economy, that was a struggle, because a lot of countries, including the United States and President Jefferson, didn't want to acknowledge a free slave society, did they?
Well, of course not. You know, slavery was a thriving business here, and so it was would have been a horrible thing to even acknowledge that a black nation found a way to free itself from the stronghold of slavery. And also, as far as France and all that it stood to lose as a result of our people becoming free, I believe that 25 years later, they levied 30 million francs reparations against Haiti, asking for funds which they lost due to the fact that Haiti was no longer a colony. So essentially, they asked Haiti to pay for the war which was lost. And this debt which Haiti ultimately paid was pretty much crippled the economy. And I do believe that, or, you know, it's been substantiated and written quite a lot about by scholars, people who know so much more about this than I do, how this debt really crippled Haiti and in a sense continues to do that. I mean, when you think about that amount, 30 million francs in 1829, some have estimated the today's value to being about $3 billion dollars. Yeah.
Which, you know, and leads us to so much that is going on today. I don't want to make you our historian, because I want to talk about your wonderful work and your life. We are talking to Katia de Ulis, and she's being gracious with her time. It's so late in Baltimore. I have to take a break here for news. Do you mind holding on so we can talk about your work, including Mouths Don't Speak, when we come back?
Oh, sure. I'm here. And I know I'm not a historian.
No, but you are from Haiti, and we are, you know, we need to learn more. And here's the thing, you know, anybody who grows up in the United States could tell you, you know, the things that perhaps other people don't know if we're traveling somewhere about our own history. And we should know. And you do know, and your experience is important and vital to the conversation that we all need to be having. So I appreciate your time, Katia.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Of course. Let me stand by for news. One moment for an update. Rob Martier in our newsroom. What's going on?
Yeah, Governor Rauner signs a law addressing issues for women behind bars, and a judge orders a new condition to be added to the list for those seeking medical marijuana. Those stories, along with sports, traffic, and weather, at the top of the hour.
Interesting. I'm curious about the addition of certain conditions for medical marijuana. That could really help a lot of people.
It will. Indeed.
Let's hope so. More after this on 720 WGN. On the line with us, we have had the pleasure of speaking with author, writer, poet, Katia D. Ulis. You can go to katiadulis.com. That's KATIADULYSSE.com for more of her writing. And she has written a book called Mouths Don't Speak. Is this your latest book, Katia?
Yes, it is.
And tell us a little bit about this story that I think was just the eighth anniversary. I guess day anniversary sounds like a harsh way of putting it when over 90,000 people died and 1.5 million people were displaced. But it was the seventh year, wasn't it?
Yes, eighth year. We call it the. You're right about calling it an anniversary. So we say remembrance. And as far as the number of casualties, the number of people, number of dead, that estimated to be close to 300,000,
really?
But closer to 250,000 people. And you're right about the 1.5 people being internally displaced. But before we go on to Mouth Don't Speak, I have to say this, and my daughter would not be happy if I don't.
Yes.
That we have an explorer from Semoc, Saint-Domingue at the time, who founded Your Fair City up there in Chicago.
Yes, DuSable.
Yes. So we have, his name was Jean-Baptiste Pointe-du-Sable, the founder of.
We've all been saying it wrong. Can you say the name again so we can practice?
Yeah, Jean-Baptiste.
Pointe-du-Sable. DuSable.
Oui. Jean-Baptiste Pointe-du-Sable is the founder of your wonderful Chicago there. And also one something that I've always been very proud of is that when Frederick Douglass served as the ambassador to Haiti, he delivered this amazing speech in 1893, January 2nd, 1893. The date is just like burned into my memory. And he talked about how what a powerful nation and what a wonderful experience he had as the ambassador to Haiti for about 6 years, I think. So I just wanted to share that.
What's your daughter's name?
My daughter's name is Juliette.
Juliette, tell her thank you for reminding us and making sure we were talking about that as well. Thank you so much.
Pardon?
Tell her thank you for making sure that we were aware of that and that you told that story. I appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, she's 13. She's fast asleep. She's like, Mommy, make sure you tell them about that. You know, because we talk about that a lot.
Tell her tomorrow for sure. We appreciate that. My son's the same way. My son's 14, and he's like, you forgot this, you forgot that. So we have.
Oh, my word. Yeah. So children, they will keep us doing what we need to do.
How many children do you have?
I have one. One, Juliette. That's it. We do have a cat.
I don't know how to explain this to people, but when you are a parent, you find the best part of yourself, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And able to accomplish things that I never would have thought possible in the past, simply because I have to be a better person for my daughter. I have to set a good example. I have to, she never asked to be born. I'm the person responsible for her here. And so it is my responsibility to do for her all those things that I might have been afraid to even do for myself. So yes, this having a child makes me a much, much, much better person.
And how does she feel about the storytelling that you do to in one way stay connected with your native home, with your homeland, and, also keeping, the sort of spirit of writing as an American as well?
Juliette loves the storytelling part. She loves to tell stories. And I've always told her stories, which my own great-grandmother had taught me when I was about Juliette. When I was younger and a little, when I was younger in Haiti. And in a way, it is a way to keep those stories alive. These stories were passed down to my great-grandmother from her own great-grandmother, who had to have come from West Africa. And so these stories are ancient. And so it's necessary to pass them on, that one day, hopefully, Juliette will pass them on to her own grandchildren. And so this is what I do with writing. It is an inspiration to tell stories that are interesting, not just to people out there, but also to my daughter, so that it keeps it just keeps going around and keep telling our stories. We need to have our own voices tell our stories for a change. Although I do mine through fiction, but as you say in the story, like mouths don't speak, it focuses entirely on the cultural identity of a woman now living, of course, in Baltimore, Maryland, although this is completely fiction, and going back to Haiti after the devastating earthquake and trying to really understand who she is in relation to the country, and also to see her relationship with her family and comparing that with her husband, who's an American native who's suffering, or I should say native-born American, suffering from acute PTSD after having gone to war and fought in Afghanistan. Yeah.
Well, this sounds like an incredible story. Again, the book is called Mouths Don't Speak. You can go to Katia D. Ulis, that's KATIADULYSSE.com. And we'll make sure we put a link up that when we post this podcast, we'll make sure there's a link to the website as well so people can find not only your book, but also the other work that you've done. Are your collections of poetry and short stories available on your website as well?
Well, you can get that anywhere books are sold, and it's going to be by a collection of short stories, Drifting, D-R-I-F-T-I-N-G, also published by Akashic Books, the most phenomenal people. I know Johnny Temple and all the wonderful people at Akashic Books. So Drifting was published in 2014. There are also some children's book published by One More Book. But I'm very, very, very proud of Mouths Don't Speak. It's a story that I wanted to tell. It's a story that I would have wanted to read had somebody else written it. And, you know, like Toni Morrison says, if there's a story you want to read that has not yet been written, so then it's your job to go out there and write it. And that's what I really wanted to do with Mouths Don't Speak, having a story in the post-quake Haiti, and also that has to do with relationships among people, those living here who did not experience the earthquake in the way that the people on the ground experienced and were nearly shattered by it.
And it's a story that we need to tell, to understand, to hear, and to be present for. Before we let you go, and I do appreciate your time, and I know I'm up against it, Michael, but I want to ask before we go, what do you want people to know about Haiti?
What I want people to know about Haiti is that we have made countless contributions, not just to the United States, but to places all over the world. Haitians, you know, it's unfortunate that we are constantly stigmatized and having all these pejorative things said about our nation or people or government and so forth. But we are a people of great talent. People, we're scholars. I have to give a plug to my sister, whom I'm very proud of, Gina Ulis, who wrote a book called Haiti Needs New Narratives. She's an anthropologist at Wesleyan University. And we continue to contribute. People like Edwige Dantica contribute immensely, not just to American culture, but all over the world. And that's the Haiti that we need people to know about. And we carry that Haiti within us wherever we go and continue to contribute, no matter what anybody says.
I appreciate that so much and look forward to talking to you again. Have an incredible evening. And again, we'll put the website up on our Facebook page. Have a great evening, Katia. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I look forward to talking to you again. More after this on 720 WGN.